For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
We have two articles on the internet, Hanukkah Miketz, and we're about to submit some more, Yitzhak Shem. The address, internet, www.t, as in Texas, F, as in Frank, Dixie.com, C-O-M. Okay, they have it officially as Lone Star Productions. And Torah from Dixie proudly present Taped on Torah. Taped on Parshas Vayechi, chapter 47, verse 28. Quick review of the Parsha, then we'll go into the highlights, God willing. Vayechi is called And the Life, just like Chayasara, and the life of Sarah. And what does it talk about? Her passing away. Here too, Vayechi, you know, Yaakov lived, and really the highlight of the Parsha, if you will, they're all highlights, I can't really say that, that's not everything important, it's equally important. But Yaakov, Vayechi, it's called because Yaakov passes away in this Parsha. The idea is, wait, let me back up. You know, obviously if you have a Parsha that Sarah Imenu passed away, Yaakov Avinu passed away, why would you call him, and the life of Sarah, or, you know, Vayechi, and he lived? Because tzaddikim, even in death, are still with us. Okay? Their legacy, their teachings, right, what they embed in us, keep going on. So in a certain sense, they don't die. Okay? So that's how the Parsha opens. It talks about the last 17 years that Yaakov Avinu spent in Mitzrayim. And by the way, it's interesting, measure for measure, he sustained Yosef, for the first 17 years of his life. Right? And now, measure for measure, Yosef is sustaining Yaakov the last 17 years of his life. And that is a numerical value of Vayechi, 34. Those are the lives, the true years that Yaakov lived was Vayechi, 34 years, with his beloved son of his beloved wife, Yosef. Okay. So, 17 years, he feels he's getting close to death. Therefore, he calls Yosef. And he says, bring me your sons. And he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. And the blessing is that all of Israel should be like Ephraim and Manasseh. We will have to discuss that. What is special about Ephraim and Manasseh that we all need that blessing. He makes Yosef swear to him that he will not bury him in Mitzrayim. That Yaakov does not want to be buried in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, for a lot of reasons. Take me out of here. You know, you guys got to live here. The first exile, Yaakov is making a point. You guys got to live here? I don't want to even be buried here. Right? Don't let me be buried here. Take me out. And that's also to emphasize that Egypt, even with you, Yosef, as the king of Egypt, it's not home. You got to live here for whatever reasons, but I don't want to be buried here because it's not home. Israel's home. Okay, so they made him swear that he'll take him out. Ephraim and Manasseh are blessed, as we already mentioned. At this time, all the children of Yaakov gather around his bed, and each one is given a unique blessing representing their unique mission, their unique talent, skill, to complete what they need to life in this world, to accomplish in this world. Every tribe's different, represented by the tribe's flags. Every flag had a different insignia, right? The Yehuda was the lion. Kings come from him, the leader. Levi is the priesthood, right? Right? From Shimon would come scribes and teachers, right? Interesting. You know, God was a warrior. Zebulun was a merchant. Yisachar sat and learned Torah. Everyone had their unique mission to serve, and that's very significant because Yaakov Avinu blesses them, recognizing each one's unique mission. And at the same time, while you each have your unique mission to serve God, and you find your shlemus, your wholeness that way, but still it has to be within the confines of all Israel. And that's hinted to when he emphasizes this unity factor. He says, gather, He says, gather in, and he says, chapter 49, verse 1, when he tells his sons, he'asfu, gather in, like, you know, get together, all right? And then and verse 2 again, he'kapsu, come together. And then he blesses them, and at the end it says, and Yaakov gave him a blessing, vayivarech osam, east, asher, kivrachaso, berech, oisam. He gave every person their blessing, and then a joint blessing that their blessing should be used for the strength and unity of all Israel. It's very significant, okay? And that's significant for us because each one of us have our own specialties, you know, our own unique talents and skills that God endowed us with, and he gave us that for a reason. He gave us that reason. We're supposed to use that in the service of Hashem, and to such an extent that we'll be held accountable if we don't. Right? If a person has a beautiful voice, you know, this actually happened in Tanakh. You know the famous story of Ahab and Jezebel? In English, she's called Jezebel. Very wicked queen, very wicked king and a very wicked queen. Right? So they coveted someone's vineyard. Nevois, I think was his name. Right? They coveted his vineyard. And they framed him, right? And they had, well, they framed him. Actually, they put him to death. They had him put to death because he wouldn't sell them the vineyard, and they took his vineyard. So this guy was pretty righteous. He was very righteous. Why was he put to death? In other words, the question that the commentaries ask is, God would not have let a righteous person just die if he didn't deserve death for some other reason. Okay? You know, that's a rule by us. You know, the fact that you know, there's anti-Semites out there, right? They're going to get it, no doubt about it. But it also means there's a spiritual weakening within us. Because if we were truly all strong in Torah mitzvahs, there'd be no such thing as an anti-Semite, okay? If we're strong spiritually, there's a special protection over us. God won't let anything happen to us. That's a very, very important yisod. You have to know that. Okay. So this guy, why did he deserve a death penalty, so to speak? I mean, you know, why did he die? So they say he was a Levi, and he had a beautiful voice. And the Shalosh Ragalim, you know, Pesach, right? Shavuos and Sukkos, he used to go down to the temple and sing. The Levim were like, had a choir, and they sung. This one time, this one festival came up, he didn't feel like going down. I'm simplifying. I'm sure there was a reason he didn't go down. Probably a very big, valid reason. Okay? But he didn't go. And Hashem said, I gave you that beautiful voice, you know, to use, to praise me. Right? People enjoy hearing that voice. It gets them enthused and gets them into, you know, Yiddishkeit and makes them feel good and they're able to serve me better. I gave you that talent, that bracha for a reason, to be used in the service of Hashem. And you didn't go down. He, on his level, he was such a big tzaddik, this guy, had a death penalty on him. Because you know the rule, you know. The greater you are, the more strict God is with you. And therefore, he died. So the point is, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I'm trying, the point is that I'm just trying to tell you, in for us, that if you see a certain tendency or skill or talent that you have, it was given to you on purpose. Some people lock onto certain mitzvahs. They like the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick in the hospital. You know, they just feel it. They feel God's presence closer to them in doing that mitzvah. That's their special, like, truma, special offering to Hashem. Everybody has to do 613 mitzvahs, but there's a certain mitzvah, maybe, or a certain skill or talent each one feels is the conduit to, you know, for all the other 613 to kind of schlep behind. Each one knows, you know, our sensitivity. Some people love davening, you know. Some people love to learn. Other people love to do acts of chesed. Or a tzedakah, whatever it is. Okay. Anyways, it's very important. It's all needed. Every little piece of the puzzle is needed, right? Chafetz Chaim used to say about this: when you come to a country, you don't ask, "Gee, why do they have a Marines and an Air Force and a Navy?" Right? So he says that you need them all. The country needs them all. Same thing with us. Why do you have Sephardi Jews, Ashkenaz Jews, Litvish Jews, German Jews, Yekis? You know, Hasidic, all these different types, right? We need them all. You know, the Hasidim give a certain flavor to Yiddishkeit, a certain simcha, beautiful songs, and their unique outlook of simcha that they stress, right? Beautiful stuff, right? The Musar movement, You know, they make you, you know, cheshbon nefesh to introspect. Is that the word? Yeah. And self-searching, that's also needed to grow, right? All these beautiful things. I remember Rav Chaim Maltusky once saying, he says, you know, if a young man learning yeshiva is from Litvish stock, you know, Ashkenaz, and he never learns any of the great Hasidic masters, let's say like the Sfas Emes, or Kedush Yerim, it's a shame. It's such a shame, such beautiful Torah. And the same thing the other way. Someone from the Hasidic world, and he never learns anything of the Vilna Gaon. Oh, he's such a, you know, it's such beautiful, you have to use them all. You have to stick to your traditions, your Masorah. You know, if you're Ashkenaz, you got to be proud of that. But you should glean a little bit from the teachings of all the beautiful flavors of Yiddishkeit, okay? So that's on a whole. And by us, individually, you know, we each have our unique culture. Every Jew is a diamond. Every Jew is a unique diamond, have a unique way of doing mitzvahs. You don't do a mitzvah the same as you or you. You have individual characteristics and outlooks, right? Makes your service to Hashem that much more special. No one can duplicate it. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. Im ein ani li, mi li. If I'm not for me, who can be? Nobody. Only you can do mitzvahs the way you do it. So Zusha said, a person should never say, he says, I would never say like, boy, I wish I was like Avraham. I wish I was like Avraham Avinu. No, there was already an Avraham Avinu. The world doesn't need another Avraham Avinu. The world needs you and you and me, right? Because we have our contribution. If I was another Avraham Avinu, then the puzzle would be missing that little piece called Dovid. Right, whatever. Okay, little piece, very tiny. Michael Spock, okay. But anyway, so that's the point. It's a great feeling to know that each one of our services together is unique and precious in His eyes. That's why it says Hashem counts us like the stars. You know, compares us to the stars. Each one's a world to itself. It's a very important concept. Question. We're still reviewing the Parsha. Every tribe giving their unique blessing, as we mentioned, okay? And a lot of hints prophetically. Yaakov was looking into the future. He saw great people coming. He saw Yoshua coming from Ephraim. He saw Gideon, the great Shofet, the great judge Gideon coming from Manasseh. He saw Shimshon, Samson coming from Dan. He saw David HaMelech coming from Yehuda. He saw even Mashiach. And the primary source of Mashiach is in our Parsha, in the Bracha to Yehuda. And as a matter of fact, Yaakov wanted to reveal to them the ultimate time of Mashiach, when the redemption will come. Remind me, we'll come back to that. Again, after all this, Yaakov Avinu, when he's ready, amazing statement, when he's ready, he gathers his feet into the bed, it says, and he dies. After he finishes blessing his sons, and Yosef weeps, and the process of the burial takes place, where they take and escort Yaakov Avinu in the same groupings, you know, the tribes, these tribes, in the same groupings that they will travel in the desert, with the Aaron in the center and the groupings of four tribes on either side. Those same groupings were, the original groupings were here by Yaakov Avinu's burial, and that's how they knew how to group in the desert. Very, very significant. So they go down there. And at this time, Esau starts up. He doesn't want Yaakov to be buried there. Remind me, we'll talk about that. And it's something that he kind of loses his head over. And then the Parsha ends with one of the youngest brothers, Yosef himself, is the first of the tribes to die, to pass away at 110. That's how the Parsha ends. By Yisum ba'aron Mitzrayim, and he was placed in a coffin in Mitzrayim. And then it's Chazak, we end the book of Bereishis. Vayisam is a contraction of two words. Voy, sam, oy, vey, he was put. What does that mean? Yosef, a big tzaddik. He was buried in the field. It was blessed. People took him to another field. It was blessed. So what did Paul do? He said, look, you know, Yosef is such a tzaddik. Every field, he's being blessed. I'll take his coffin. I'll put it in the Nile River. The Nile will overflow and all of Egypt will be blessed. Plus, at the end of the Parsha, verse 25, Yosef makes them swear, God will surely remember you. He'll take you out of Egypt. And when he does, take my bones out. Do not leave Egypt without me. So Paro wanted to keep the Jews there forever. and therefore had his coffin was made of lead at the bottom of the Nile River, hoping the Jews would never find it, and therefore would never leave Egypt without the bones of Yosef. So that's the voice of Oyvei, where it was put. And it took a miracle for Moshe Rabbeinu to get the bones of Yosef, that coffin. Okay, he used Kabbalah, and the coffin floated to the surface. And that's how they got out of Mitzrayim. Now, and then starts the first exile, which we need to discuss. Why was Yosef the first of the brothers to die? That's what I started to say. Because Ribbonus shortens a person's life. A person of authority, right, a position like that, or, you know, that, for all the heartache and pain that's entailed, he's the first to die. And that's what the Gemara says, because of his position of authority, even though he was one of the youngest brothers. Okay, we'll go back now and hit some highlights. And first thing I want to tell you is that chapter 48, verse 22. I'm going to bounce around a little bit, so bear with me. Chapter 48, verse 22, the first thing I want to discuss is that measure for measure, Yaakov says to Yosef, you know, because you are going to take care of my burial, I'm going to take care of your burial. I'm going to take care of your burial spot. And that is Shechem. And it says, I'm going to give you Shechem. Shechem is where he was sold, by the way. Okay? So, it's interesting. The brothers wanted to bury Yosef in Shechem, and they're going to get to. That's like kind of ironic. So, Shechem, I'm going to give you as a burial plot. Right? And if you look at the end there of verse 22, chapter 48, verse 22, it says, Shechem, I took it from the Emori Beharbi Ubikashti. I took it with my sword and my bow. And Rashi tells us here that there was, after the battle of Shimon and Levi wiping out Shechem, that the surrounding cities started a war, a major war with Yaakov. Yeah? And he had to fight them physically and defeated them. Interesting. The Targum, and Rashi brings it down, says, what does it mean, his sword and his bow? Chachmasi betifilasi. Wisdom and my prayer. Supplications and prayers. So the significance is Yaakov Avinu realized, you know what my real weapons are? It says sword and bow and arrow. But that's really, those are prayers and supplications are the real swords and prayers. The real swords and bows and arrows of the Jewish people are supplications and prayers to God. That's the real weapons, how they defeat our enemies. We lock on spiritually to God, right? And we realize it's not koichi v'oitzim yadi, it's not our power and strength. Yisrael batach v'Hashem, we rely on God. That's what it says in Tehillim, Eila berecha, Eila besusim, they are those that place their faith in horses and chariots, you know, but we place our faith in God, right? Okay, the magic words for the Redeemer are Pakod Yifkod. These words are the words that Yaakov tells Yosef. Hashem will surely remember you, right? And at the end of the Parsha, again, these words are repeated. Chapter 50, verse 25. Yosef makes to his brother swear, saying, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem. God will surely remember you and take you out of here. That's what the word Pakod means. He'll remember you and take you out of here, right? And when the Redeemer came, this was passed down, and Moshe Rabbeinu used these words. They searched for somebody who was still alive back at the time of Yaakov who would recognize that he is the true Redeemer. And that was the daughter of Asher. Her name was Sarah, right? And they asked her, you know, use these words. Yes, yeah, those are the words. He's the real Redeemer. Pakod Yifkod. Some people say Moshe was heavy of tongue. He had a lisp. So he couldn't say that P. He couldn't say the P word. So the fact that he was able now to pronounce it showed that he truly was the Redeemer. Because normally, he would not be able to pronounce it. But another hint to that, the double language, Pakod Yifkod, we translate, surely remembered. So it's, again, Egypt being the paradigm of the future exile we're in now and the future redemption. So it says, Hashem will remember you in this exile and take you out. Pakod and Yifkod, he will remember you in the future, the ultimate redemption. Also, listen to this, Das Kin and Baal Tosfos and the Baal HaTurim, the dynamic duo. Okay. He says, beautiful, the numerical value of pakod, right, is 190. 190. Now, why is that significant? Because pakod, also yifkod, can mean chaser, chisaron. It can mean missing. So this double language could be read, Hashem will take away, it'll be missing 190. What are we talking about? The bris ben Abasarim to Avram, you will be stranger in a land not yours, 400 years. How many years were we in Egypt? Radu, 210. 190 years were taken off. And that's the hint here. Hashem, pakod, yivkod. Again, yivkod from the word chisaron, to take away, less. He'll take away pakod, pei, kuf, vav, dalad, equals 190. He'll take away 190 years. He'll remember you. But remember, you and take away 190 years, and you'll come out early, because, again, we knew if we stayed there any longer, we'd have completely assimilated. Okay? That's what it says also in the Haggadah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chishav es haketz. He thought about the end. Ketz, the end, means the end. Ketz, also numerical value, 190. Okay? All right. Moving right along here. Okay. Zebulun and Yisachar. We're going to go into some of the brachas. Some of them. One of them. Zebulun and Yisachar. Famous partnership. Zebulun took care of the materialistic world. He was a merchant. Right? And he supported Yisachar, who studied Torah. We said once before that that was what Yitzchak had in mind for the non-Jewish world and the Jewish world. Right? And that was Esav, physical guy. Great. Get involved in physicality. Support your brother Yaakov, Ish Tam, Yoshef, Ohalim. Right, like Yisachar, he's a man that dwells in the tent, learn Torah. You support him, and you get a share of Torah that way. But Rivka saw, no, Esav's going to use the materialistic blessings for his own selfish needs. He's not going to support his brother in Torah. But that was the original plan. That answered the question, how could Yitzchak love Esav? What's going on? He didn't know Yaakov was a tzaddik. Of course he knew Yaakov was a tzaddik. But he saw that Esav had this particular skill, talent, like we said before. Right, channel it to the service of God. Gomorrah says if a person is born under a certain constellation, okay, we don't understand these things, but there was a legitimate science back then, to shed blood. That shows that he's going to shed blood. Channel that into the service of Hashem. Become a butcher. Become a moil. Do bris milas. Okay, channel that. Right? Everything can be channeled. There's no such thing as a bad character trait in a certain sense. You can use a positive, even anger. You can be zealous for God, like Pinchas. Controlled. Okay. So that was the idea. Here it worked. Yitzchak missed it by one generation. His wish of Esav and Yaakov, physical supporting the spiritual, worked in the next generation with these two famous brothers. Zebulun was a merchant, successful in his enterprise out there in the business world, because Yisachar sat and learned Torah, made Zebulun successful out there, and in turn, that money, he supported Yisachar, and it went back and forth. They made each other successful. This is the way it will be at the end of days, with the non-Jewish world and Wahabdil us. How will they have some connection to any sort of spirituality? They're limited. They will have connection by supporting it, by paving the physical world. That's what they're supposed to do. And as a matter of fact, there's a Gemara in the tractate called Sukkah, and it says at the end of days, the Romans will come, and they'll say, we have a share in Torah. And they'll say, you know why? We built marketplaces and bathhouses and roads, so and all these conveniences in the physical world, so the Jews can sit and learn Torah. So, Kadosh Baruch will say, Shaiti, you fools. You didn't do that. You did it for your own reasons. You did it for your own pleasures. But the presumption is the following. Had they done it for that reason, so we could sit and learn Torah, they would have had a share in Torah. So that's what it'll be at the end of days, represented here by Zebulun Yisachar. But I want you to know, every Jew, says the Chiddush Yerim, is a Zebulun Yisachar. Those times that you're out there in the work field, you're Zebulun. Those times you're in shul praying, right here learning Torah, you're Yisachar. So each Jew within him has both of these, right? And in that way, you are mikdash the business world that you're at. When you're out there being a Zebulun, right, that you are successful. Why? Because of those times that you are Yisachar, when you're davening and when you're learning. Then the Zebulun part of you is successful. Right? And if you do the Zebulun part out in the business world for the purpose so you can learn Torah, right? Each one becomes successful. If you can't learn Torah, you know, to this very day, they have this contract, Zebul Yisachar. You know, you find someone who is learning, and you support him, or you support a yeshiva, and you get an equal share. So much so that these brachas are in order of their birth, except for these two. Yisachar, the older brother, is not mentioned before Zebulun. Zebulun's mentioned first, because if it wasn't for Zebulun, Yisachar wouldn't have been able to learn Torah. Therefore, his name is mentioned first. He gets an equal share of Yisachar's Torah. That's how important it is to support Torah learning. But, and this, by the way, is very significant in a lot of ways, but it says in Pirkei Avos, Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz, right? Shegiyah shneyam mishkachas avon. You know, Talmud Torah, learning and being occupied in a business, or, you know, parnasa, sustenance, right? If you're one sustains the other, so to speak, right? You have to have both. Ein kemach, ein Torah. You know, if you have no food, no sustenance, no materialistic needs, it's very hard to sit and learn Torah. Very good point. Excellent point. A wife, right, who sits there and takes care of the house, and takes the domestic chores, and has supper ready on the table, all these things, she becomes like the Zebulun to her husband, Yisachar, and she gets an equal share in his Torah. Very good point. By the way, very interesting. Zebulun was not just satisfied, by the way, okay, I'm Yaitzah, I'll support Yisachar. No, he himself was a scholar. He himself learned. That's a big misconception people don't realize. They think he didn't learn at all. No! But we're saying if a person can't learn, then he can have this contract. But even so, a person should try to learn. You know, everybody according to what they can handle. Okay. We're going to keep them heads a-rolling. Listen to this one. Chapter 50, verse 10. Ad goyen ha'aitad. They come to the burial place, right? What happens? Yaakov has passed away. He's sitting there. They're about to bury him in Machpelah, right? Mm-hmm. Esav comes along, right? And says, no. There's one spot left in Machpelah. I want to be buried there. And they say, then the brother says, what are you talking about? You know, you sold it to our father Yaakov. Prove it. Let me see the deed. So they're talking back and forth. They're going to send Naphtali back to Egypt to get the deed, right? And one of the grandchildren, the son of Dan, is named Hushim. He's deaf. It's interesting. Hushim means a hush. It's like one of the senses. It's interesting that he's called Hushim and he's deaf. Anyways, so he's like, all these brothers are getting involved in this discussion with Esav. All these brothers are getting involved in a conversation with Esav, okay? And in the meantime, Yaakov Avinu's body has been sitting there lying around, not, you know, in like a tremendous disgrace, right? And Hushim, who's deaf, doesn't understand what's going on. So he tries to ask one of his brothers, what's happening? So they tell him, you know, Esav won't let us bury our father Yaakov because, you know, he wants a deed and everything. And he says, wait a second, because this Shagetz, you know, he doesn't want, he demands proof, and he knows good and well that it belongs to our father Yaakov. I'm going to let my father lie here, you know, in a bazillion like this. He took a club and knocked Esav's head off. Rolling. Keep them heads up. And it rolled into Machpelah. Esav's head is buried in Machpelah. We'll have to discuss the significance of that. But in the meantime, he was dead. Now, the question that's asked here, and this is by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Zikron Lebrocha, he says the following. Why didn't all the other sons of Yaakov react to this disgrace to their father? He's sitting there, Yaakov Avinu is sitting there waiting to be buried, and they have to argue with this guy. Why didn't they take up the cudgels for their father? Why, you know? So, the fact was, because Hushim was deaf, he reacted where they didn't. What do I mean? The fact is, the other sons got so used to the idea that their father Yaakov Avinu was lying there, and they started this discussion, and you know, at the beginning I imagine it would bother them, but they got so involved in the discussion, yay, nay, get the star, get the deed, we'll send Naphtali, you know, this and that, and it got a whole debate here. They completely sort of got used to the fact that Yaakov Avinu was lying there, knew what can we do, he has to lie there until we can bury him. So, that is a gradual thing, okay, it's just gradually. First, you know, you can't stand it. All of a sudden, you begin to adjust to it, right? This goes for everything, okay? Chushim was deaf. He didn't hear this whole give and take and this whole thing. So what did he do? He asked what happened. He got the bottom line. This is what happened. What's the bottom line? My father's lying. My Zadie's lying here, rather. My Zadie's lying here in disgrace. The heck with that. Off with your head, Aesop. And that's it. So you see from here, the point is why he reacted, Chushim, and none of the others did it. You can get used to anything. You can even get used to your father lying there in disgrace when you're talking to a Shagetz about burying him, right? Now, this trait can be a bracha. And that is, we go through life and we have to adjust. We have to adapt. So if it wasn't for this trait that we could get used to anything, we would never make it through all the situations and calamities and trials and tribulations we go through, right? You know. So that's a gift of resilience and adaptability that Kosh Baruch has given us. But there's a terrible downside to it. And that downside is that you can get used to, for example, a soldier in the army, the first time he kills, if you ever speak to these guys, it's a tremendous shock to their system. You know? And then by the fourth, fifth, sixth killing, it's just, you know, it's like auto parts. It's another car. It's another automobile. It's a danger by the way doctors, when they treat patients. At the beginning, they're very concerned about the welfare of the patient. And then, you know, the patients, their bodies, you know, parts, it just, you know, you lose the sensitivity. You get used to it. So the Gemara is teaching us the following thing. You have to use this in the right way, obviously. And there's times that a person has to watch out and say, this particular abomination, I'm not supposed to get used to. I'm not supposed to adapt. Something that's disgusting, right? A certain situation with homosexuality. You know, it's an accepted thing in the world. It's not acceptable to us. It's not acceptable to us. It's disgusting. It always was disgusting. It always is. It is and always will be. You know, so what happens? The first time you see a couple fagula walking in the street, shocks you. Hey, how disgusting. And then after a while, it doesn't bother you. You see it all the time. You keep seeing it all the time. You know, that's the way it is. No, the Torah is saying that you got to be appalled and disgusted, right? And this goes, by the way, in professional life. You know, you go there and you hear people talking disgustingly or telling sick jokes, innuendos, right? A lack of modesty, you know, shame. So at the beginning, it's very shocking to your system, you know, especially as a Jew. After all, you get used to it, you ignore it. No, you cannot, like Chushim Ben Dan, you can't get used to it. It has to always be disgusting to you, right? You shouldn't be able to take it, okay? Because, and by the way, there was an interesting thing, a guy in Yeshiva, Rav Yisachar Fran says this over, a guy in Yeshiva came up to him, and he said this very thing about his professional life. He says, I can't take it. You know, all the dirty jokes they say at work, you know, and all the innuendos and the lack of modesty. I can't take it anymore. So he said, he gave him a bracha. He says, I give you a bracha that you should always feel that way, that you can't take it. Because the moment you start feeling you can take it, that's when it's really bad. That means you assimilated to it and you've made peace with it. Certain things you can't make peace with. You should be burning mad with rage over it. Okay? You're saying, you know, if goyim are homosexuals, do we care? We care because it affects all of us. Everything out there affects you. If you never have a TV, if you never watch pornography, right? But the fact that it's out there, it has an effect on society, the way they think, where they're found. It comes out in other arenas, and it seeps into us. It has some sort of effect, not as strong as with them, but we lose our sensitivity. We use our edelkeit. There's no coincidence that even amongst the Orthodox, we have a higher divorce rate than ever before. Still much lower than anybody else. But still, because there's such a high divorce rate amongst the secular world, it filters down. We all are affected by these things. So we do care. And by the way, it's a basic Jewish premise. We're not just concerned about the Jewish people. And that Avraham Avinu teaches that we're concerned. And Yosef also, he makes all the Egyptians have a circumcision. To make them more moral, less lustful. Okay, we are concerned that everybody be decent. Okay, now, next topic. Chapter 50, verse 5. When they were explaining to Esav, you know, back before this, when Yaakov tells Yosef, you know, to bury me in Machpelah, and again it's reiterated how he bought it. That Machpelah is reiterated many times. It says, "Bekivri asher karisi li." Bury me in what I dug out for me. So, karisi is an interesting word. It also means like a pile. So Rashi says there, Shanata Yaakov kol kesef v'zahav asa aso keri. Yaakov took all the gold and silver that he accumulated in Laban's house, right? And he made a pile of it. And he says, Esav, you know, make a choice. You want Machpelah or you would like all this gold and silver? So Esav said, you can have the hole in the ground. I'm taking the gold and silver. Goodbye. And that's what he did. So they made a deal there, okay? And that's what he says. He said to Esav, Tul zeh bishvil chalkecha b'mara. Take this for your portion in Machpelah. So it's interesting. If you remember back in Parshas by Yishlach, it says that Yaakov feared. And, you know, we question that. How could he fear? Yaakov, you know, was promised by Hashem to take care of him. So we said then he feared spiritually that maybe because he was lacking two mitzvahs during these past 20 years, and Esav had two mitzvahs, that's something to fear about. What were those two mitzvahs? Yaakov wasn't in Israel for the last 20 years. There's a mitzvah to live in Israel. Right? And Yaakov was limited on his kibud av-em, honoring his father and mother, because he was away from home. Esav had those two mitzvahs. Ooh, there's something to fear. So listen to this beautiful insight. Again, I'm quoting Rav Fran. He says beautiful thing here. He says, the only way to offset Esav's power of these two mitzvahs is somehow to equally have these two mitzvahs. Either one way or another, either to show that you have the same chashivas you hold, that Eretz Yisrael is important to you, and honoring your father and mother is important to you, more so than Esav, and that Esav's living in Israel and honor his father and mother in retrospect wasn't that important to you. How are you going to do that? With this maisa, with selling the burial spot. If you think about it, what is he saying? Yaakov is willing to give up all his wealth that he got outside the land of Israel. All the money and silver I got outside of the land of Israel means nothing to me, says Yaakov, because it was outside the land of Israel, right? And so what does he do? So he sets up this whole pile of money that he got outside the land of Israel, right, to buy what? The kever, the burial place of his fathers and mothers, right? The burial place of Avram and Sarah, of Yitzchak and Rivka. That's where I want to be buried, right? So he's doing two things. He's showing that anything that he didn't acquire in the land of Israel is not important to him, his love for the Lord of Israel, land of Israel, and he's showing his love for his father and mother, Kibud Av Em, which extends even to grandparents. That's where I want to be buried, okay? At the same time, right, I'll exchange this, you know, to be buried in the land of Israel, emphasizing again my love for the land of Israel. I want to be buried there, while in fact, Esav is willing to give up the right to be buried in Israel. You see, he didn't really have a love for the land of Israel. He's willing to give up the land of Israel and his ancestral tomb, right, for gold and silver. This negated his two mitzvahs that he had of honor his father and mother and the love for the land of Israel, because he's willing to sell it. He was willing to sell it. Yaakov, on one hand, was willing to give away all his money to have those two mitzvahs, Kibud Av Em and being buried in Israel, and Esav was willing to sell those two mitzvahs. That's what it boils down to us. So that's how he offset it. It's a beautiful insight. Okay, another thing. Esav's head, we said, is buried in Machpelah. Well, this is very significant because Esav had the head of a genius. He was brilliant, and he could have been great. You know, that's why we said Yitzchak want to work with them continuously. The problem is the body didn't fall. The problem is always the body, the materialism, the physicality. That drug him down, right? His titus, his desires, his lust, his, you know, pursuit of the physical wasn't connected to the head. Therefore, the head got disconnected from the body. The head belonged to Machpelah. The head belonged to Machpelah. It was a good head. But the rest of the body couldn't be buried there because it chased its desires. At the end of this parsha, we start the exile to Egypt. This is considered, you know, we are in start the servitude with Yaakov dying. But the truth is, there's actually no slavery. So how does the exile start? This is very interesting. Sfas Emes, he says, this parsha is called a stuma. I can't go into it, but it means it's closed up. There's not a letter break like there is in other parshas. There's a certain minimum amount of letters that breaks between parsha and parsha. It doesn't happen here. It runs right into the next one. So it says the reason is, even though it's not physical servitude, the heart and the eyes were stooming. They were shut up. They couldn't feel. They couldn't see. That's the start of the real exile, the exile of the neshama. Says the Sfas Emes, when the heart and the eyes only see and they only feel external things and not the essence, oyvei, that's the biggest golus. When you think this is the real thing and spirituality is just, do the rituals, and you don't realize that's the reality, right? What you see is what you get. If you believe that's a true axiom, that shows you're really in the exile. So it started here. It's already represented by the parsha being stumit, shut up, completely with no break. Okay, appreciate your patience, guys. We're almost there. Menashe is given preference over Ephraim. Right? Wrong. I said it wrong. Ephraim is given a preference over Menashe, even though he is the younger brother. Now, you know why. There's a lot of things here, and the hands are switched, and Ephraim gets these brachas that really go to the firstborn. The point is, Ephraim was the person that studied Torah. He studied Torah with Yaakov and with Yosef. Menashe was a great righteous person. He ran the affairs of state. He was like Yosef's right-hand man in political. Yaakov was making a point here to always reserve our highest regards for the Talmud Chacham, for the scholar, for the Torah sage. Even though Menashe was like vice president, right? And Ephraim was like this old Jew sitting there learning Torah, so to the world it seems like Menashe is the big deal, right? He has all the publicity, the press. But we know the true power and the person that we give our highest regards for is the Jews studying Torah. And that's Yaakov's emphasizing this. And therefore he gives the preference to Ephraim over Menashe. He wanted to tell them the end of days. He wanted to tell them about Mashiach, Yaakov did. And he says, and it's here, right here in the verses, listen to this, chapter 49, verse 1. He says, let me tell you, let me tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. And then he goes into a different topic and he doesn't tell them. So it says two people knew the end. They knew exactly the date when Mashiach will come, Yaakov Avinu and Daniel, and they were told by Hashem to keep the matter a secret, not to reveal it. It's very interesting. What's the reason for that? The reason is a lot of reasons, but I'll just tell briefly, to allow for free will. This way, any generation can bring Mashiach sooner. The idea, if we knew a predestined time, we would never have survived this exile. It's so far away, what's the use? Yaakov was afraid that one of his children was not deserving. One of them was a sinner. We know they're all tzaddikim, but Yaakov couldn't understand why the Shekhinah departed from him, and he was kept from telling over this that he wanted to tell him the name Mashiach. So when he asked, the children responded with, you ready for this? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, Israel, Yisrael, Yaakov's other name. Just like God's one with you, He's one with us. There's no sinners here. And Yaakov responded, Baruch Shem Kavod Mafusul Aved, blessed is your name, which we say in the Shema. Some people say he responded with Yehi Shmei Rabbah, that we say. So, interesting, there's a lot of mysticism here, but the point is they were all tzaddikim, these tribes, but their descendants wouldn't be as great as they were. And if they knew that Mashiach was so far off, they would despair. These tzaddikim could handle it. So Yaakov was kept from telling the end of days, not because of these great children, but because of their descendants weren't really. Okay, so, and again, like we said, it would be no free will element that we could bring Mashiach anytime. But one thing he did hint to them, he did get some message out, and that was these words, he'asfu, gather, hikapsu, unite. In other words, I'll tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. To bring the end of days, to bring Mashiach, unite. Show unity, achdus, right? That will bring Mashiach. brotherhood, peace, love, harmony amongst Israel. Okay, and then he goes into the blessings, which we already talked about, reflecting all these. Okay, and by the way, this corresponds way back in Vayetzeh, chapter 28, verse 11, when Yaakov Avinu put 12 stones around his head, and they became one stone. They became one stone. The unity. Okay. That's the only way it can come. Primary source for Mashiach is in the Parsha on the words Ad Ki Yavo Shilo, which is chapter 49, verse 10. Yavo Shilo, numerical value 358, the same as Mashiach. Also, Shilo is the same numerical value as Moshe, 345, says the Or Chaim HaKodesh, just as Moshe led us out of the first Golas, he'll lead us out of the last Golas, he'll be Mashiach. Ah, you'll ask, Moshe Rabbeinu is from the tribe of Levi, Mashiach has to come from Dovid HaMelech, Yehuda. So he says, no kasha, it'll be the Neshama, the soul of Moshe Rabbeinu will be in there with the tribe of Yehuda. Okay, so Mashiach will be the king over Israel, Ad Ki Yavo Shilo, and then all the nations will recognize him. That's what the verse says. All nations, and then he'll be the king over the whole world. 49:10, right? Yehuda will be the king over the whole world. Those last three words, Velo Yikat Amin. To him all the nations will gather. Okay? Next thing I want to discuss. We mentioned that because Esav learned Torah, he did learn Torah under Avraham and Yitzchak, so you know his head was buried in Machpelah, but not his body. I just wanted to add to that. Esav didn't, and that was another point, besides the drives for physicality, so his body couldn't be in Machpelah. Esav, there's two ways you can learn Torah, you know. Esav, you can learn Torah that you want to serve Hashem, you want this to be a part of you. When we learn here, it's not a mental gymnastics. As they say, to learn geometry, you don't have to be a triangle. Right? Mashenken with Torah. Torah, you have to be a living embodiment of Torah. We're learning to know how to live. That's the purpose why we're learning, not as a mental gymnastics. So Esav wasn't like that. He learned it because, there's people out there who do this. It's such an ingenious, you know, pill pull back and forth, the Gemara. It's such a great mental exercise. But he never took to heart. He never took to heart the Torah. He never wanted to guide his actions. Therefore, says Rav Aaron Cutler, only his head, the mental exercise part, could be buried in Machpelah. The brothers are afraid after Yaakov Avinu dies that, you know, maybe Yosef's going to take vengeance on us now. Up to this time he was very nice to us. All of a sudden now, he's not inviting us to his table anymore. You know? Why doesn't he, what's going on here? So Yosef had his reasons for doing it. He knew the process of a servitude was going to start, and it was going to be because we assimilated. So he wanted to keep the brothers in Goshen, not to curry favor to them, not to arouse the jealousy of the Egyptians. But that was his reason. But the brothers suspected that he wanted to take vengeance. So chapter 50, verse 15, very interesting words. They say the following. They feared because their father had died, and they said, you know, perhaps Yosef hates us. And say, V'yomru lu yistameinu Yosef v'hashiv yashiv lanos kol hara. You know, perhaps Yosef, hates us and he's going to return to us, get vengeance on us. So it's very interesting. We discussed this once before, right? With the words of when Yaakov was dressed up in Esav's clothes. We said the difference. There's two ways to say perhaps. Ulai and pen. Right? Two ways. But one means ulai, alavai, it should happen. Right? And pen means you fear, you don't want it to happen. And Yaakov said, ulai, perhaps my father will feel me and see that I'm, not Esav, I'm Yaakov. He wanted the whole thing to be called off. He didn't want to see his father. Here too, lu, the word lu, which is a shortening of the word ulai, the brothers should have said, they should have said pen here, right? Chapter 50, verse 15. They should have said, Yomer pen yistameinu, perhaps he hates us and he wants to get vengeance on us. We don't want it to happen. Pen. They said lu, like ulai, alavai. In other words, if we sinned, we want to get paid back in this world. Alavai, you should pay us back in this world so we don't get punished in the next world. And the fact is, they did to a certain degree, but we don't know how this works. But 10 martyrs, including Rabbi Akiva, died because of the sin of the 10 brothers. And so they knew what they were talking about. Alavai, we should get paid, we should get punished in this world and not the next world, to atone for the sin and to not rebound on our descendants as it did to the Asare Haruge Malchus. Hard concept. This magic words, we said it's the words of redemption, Pakod Yifkod. Yashem will surely remember you, but the implication will be a long wait where it seems that Hashem has forgotten us. Right? We'll be in exile for like over 1920 years. You know, we'll have a Holocaust. We'll have the Spanish Inquisition. We'll be in America with 6 million intermarried Jews, right? And then suddenly he'll manifest his presence. And all of a sudden it'll seem to us like, oh, now he remembers us. And so that's the implication here, not to despair. A lot of similarities. I can't go into them all now, but there's a lot of similarities between Moshe and Yosef. Maybe we'll go into next week, but just a couple. Both their father-in-laws are idol-worshipping priests. Yosef's Potiphar, Moshe, Yitro, before he converted, right? Both have two sons in exile who are complete tzaddikim, right? Moshe leads the same grouping of the children of Israel that Yosef leads in the burial of Yaakov that we mentioned, right? And both are pointed heads over their household. Moshe over the household of Paro as an adopted son, and Yosef by Potiphar. A lot of them, Moshe and Yosef, and including David HaMelech, all died Shabbos afternoon. And both of them, their merits sustain all of Israel, and so forth and so on. I just want to conclude with a famous vort by the Meshe Chochma, Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. And he says, in this exile, it's known that we were redeemed because of a few merits we had. One of them, we didn't change our names, right? And we didn't change our language. We kept our Yiddish names, our Lashon HaKodesh, and we didn't change our clothes. We kept some sort of distinct Yiddish clothing while we were slaves in Egypt. So, but on the other hand, the Medrash tells us we're on the 49th level of impurity. We're idol worshippers there. So he says, interesting, these maintaining an external identity of a Jew, right? Even not doing any mitzvahs. Listen to this. Maintaining the external identity of a Jew is more significant in preventing assimilation than the performance of mitzvahs. It's a real big chiddush, you know, right? And I'll tell you, you know, today, I just had an incident last night. Someone, his friend came in from out of town, you know, wanted me to come over, and I told him I couldn't come over. You know, I was about to come over there, you know, say hello and everything. They told me, oh, one thing I should tell you, and this person's Jewish, there's a tree. December 25th tree. I said, I can't come over. I'm sorry, I can't acknowledge a symbol that represents millions and millions of my brothers and sisters' blood being spilled. I know many people, and I was like, back and forth, whole conversation there. But the point is, you know, it's like an accepted thing. I know people, I just had another conversation 3 days ago with a person just recently moved, you know, and he's telling me, just offhand, he's telling me, yeah, I went out and got gifts for my, you know, non-Jewish friends, December 25th gift. What's going on here? You know, these are not maintaining external signs, identity of a Jew. These are assimilation signs. Both these parties that I'm talking about, right, are not doing mitzvahs, are not observant Jews, but at least maintain a Yiddish stolz, a pride that you're Jewish. I'll tell you a famous story. There was a, you know, like one of these pogroms that started in Europe, right? And they went wild, and the Jewish quarter was, you know, every home that they saw like a mezuzah or whatever, they destroyed it. So one person was out of town. The man was out of town, the man of the house, and the wife and the kids were left in the house. So he didn't know anything that happened. And when he came back, he noticed that his house was intact. His house was intact. All the other Jewish houses were destroyed inside. The furniture was, you know, wrecked and everything. So he asked his son, he says, what happened? How come we weren't touched? He says, you know, look, you know what I did? I saw them coming. The pogrom started. So I took a tree, you know, one of those December 25th trees. and I put it inside the house. The goyim came, you know, they were about to do it, they were about to destroy the house, and they saw the tree, and they realized, you know, we must not be Jews, and they went to the next house. So what was the reaction of the father? Okay. He says, that's the biggest pogrom. You bring a tree into this house? That's the biggest pogrom. He took the tree and he started destroying all the furniture. He started destroying the house. It's a true story. There can be a pogrom, a physical pogrom we can survive. A spiritual pogrom, we can't survive that. It's very important this time of year, don't get caught up in the spirit. Because it ain't a spirit. It ain't a true spirit. It's a shtus. Have a good Shabbos, everybody. This idea that we mentioned, the external signs, the external identity of the Jew, right, prevents assimilation. That is very important in this culture that we live in America. By remaining distinct, no matter what the surroundings are, even what our fellow Jews are doing and getting caught up in this nonsense, by remaining distinct, that's how the Jews survive and flourish. Not by trying to find favor in their eyes and show that we're multicultured. That will only cause you to lose your own self-respect, and in return, they won't have any respect for you. By maintaining your Jewish identity, they have more respect for you. Now I can wish you truly a good Shabbos.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.